to the Krishna consciousness. We still have cleanliness left to do, but after this, after the prasad was distributed, this wasn't food. Just listening, not absorbing. These topics are meant for practical application. So it's not just something to fill up the time. So training, the other day we were discussing about how devotees should be ideal. So that is automatic. A devotee who is trying to please Krishna tries to please Krishna in the best way. He wants to do everything very nicely for Krishna. Krishna is not served in a third-class manner. Could you please wash your hand? Because if you put your hand on your mouth, it becomes contaminated. This is training, which I'm giving at the time. So a devotee should be ideal and they try to do everything in the nicest possible way for Krishna, which means they have to find out what Krishna wants and what is the proper standard of behavior. Therefore, one has to go to a guru. A guru trains in philosophy and behavior. I was saying also that gurus, they don't train in passing stool, you wash up and take bath afterwards. That's supposed to be, you're supposed to get trained at home in that before you go to the guru. But there are many aspects of behavior that the guru teaches also. How to worship the Lord, especially how to engage in the... There's so many different yantras, tantras, mantras that traditionally may be taught. Here's one point of training. Prabhupada specifically said many times he didn't like this cutting during class. He said one thing it's a disturbance, and another thing they should be listening to the class. If you like, I'm giving instruction, that is training. If you like, you can implement it. If you don't, then the teacher sees it out, or do whatever you like. Shut the door, so I won't see it. Still, we're hearing it. So, a devotee is ideal. He learns, and then he teaches. That is the principle of parampara: learning and then teaching. So, those who are teaching, they should have learned very nicely from bona fide teaching, and then they should teach others. You should repeat. Makes a lot of difference. You should repeat what you have heard and what you have understood. Without changing anything. That is how the parampara goes on. That's another important point in my book, that we shouldn't concoct or invent or change anything. Whatever is given by our acharya in the Krishna Gorgeous womb especially, we have to follow Prabhupada, the standards he has given. So those who have heard nicely and learned nicely, they should teach others. And that is automatic. That someone who has heard nicely and who is absorbed Krishna consciousness, they like to teach others. They not only like, but they feel the need to do so. That I should give I should convey what I have heard to others. Especially when people come to Krishna consciousness. Then, in many ways, they're like children who require guidance. Newer devotees, they need guidance. Just like children are trained by their parents in so many things. Of course, in the modern age, the children are not trained by their parents in anything because the parents are too lazy to do so, and therefore the children are like wild animals. But traditionally, parents, they take the trouble to train their children in proper standards of behavior. So similarly, persons coming to our Krishna conscious movement, they require training to be informed what is the proper standard of behavior, what are the different intricacies of that, and that how the training goes on. That, yes, we were just reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Prabhupada used to paraphrase, Apani Acharya Prabhu Shikari Jibari Shika, that the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would teach by his own example. That is the meaning of Acharya. Swayam Acharate Yasma, by his own behavior, he teaches. So, especially the devotees living in the ashram. There are devotees living in the ashram and devotees living outside. So those who are living outside, they, not that they have to be, but then it's quite likely they may be compromised in various ways. They may not be able to follow everything very strictly because of other commitments. They have social and family and work commitments. But those who are living in the ashram, they are supported by those who donate so that they can live in the ashram and live the life of sadhus. And in this way, set an example for others and become learned in Shastra so they can teach others. That's where Prabhupada saw our centers as training institutions. So those who are training, they should be, first of all, setting a very good example. Then they can train others very nicely. Actually, everyone who takes Brahmin initiation, Brahmin means he's... When Brahmin initiation is given, then he has the authority and the duty to teach others. So he should be... When one takes Brahmin initiation, it means that he should be... Could we turn this down or off? I'm going to start sneezing on the place. Sorry, I have a bit of a sensitive constitution. So this point that devotees should be ideal, and those who are in a compromised situation, they should strive to be as ideal as possible. But those who are living in a temple, supported by the public, so that they can fully dedicate themselves in the service of Krishna. So especially these devotees should be ideal and cultivate Krishna consciousness, following very strictly, very enthusiastically, and doing so in such a way that they are able also to teach others. So devotees from the congregation should be able to come and receive guidance and training. So training is there in philosophy and practice. We're mostly talking about, here we're talking about Vaishnava etiquette, which means, when we're talking about training in Vaishnava etiquette, that means training in different modes of behavior. But of course, training also means in understanding the Vaishnava philosophy. So both go on side by side. Actually, we can't properly understand Vaishnava philosophy if we're not properly trained in Vaishnava behavior, because the two things are interlinked. Vaishnava behavior is also based on philosophy. Now, why should we serve? Why should we endeavor to serve Krishna very nicely? Why should we bother? What difference does it make? But the understanding is that we have to do everything nicely for Krishna, because that is our constitutional position, to be the servant of Krishna. So the philosophical basis is there. And for all the different practices, there are various practices such as bathing regularly, not performing puja in a contaminated state. Traditionally, one should go at least one bow shot away from any residence before defecating. So all these rules are there. They have scientific and philosophical basis. So philosophy is the basis on which understanding Vaishnava etiquette rests. And Vaishnava philosophy cannot be properly understood unless one follows the principles of Vaishnava behavior. Because unless one is acting in a way to satisfy Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then he won't be blessed by them to understand Vaishnava philosophy. So they're completely interlinked. It's not that we can understand Vaishnava philosophy or become Krishna conscious only by reading books. We have to actually act as Vaishnavas, act in a manner that is pleasing to Krishna and the other Vaishnavas. So that training is required. Training means that it is the duty, especially of those who are leaders in Krishna consciousness, and as I was saying, every Brahmin initiated devotee is a leader, and especially gurus in our movement are leaders, but at the local level we have temple presidents and especially temple resident brahmanas. Those who are not Brahmin initiated, they may be that they didn't come to that level or they're still in training themselves. But after some time, one is supposed to become competent enough to teach others, and then he should do. And this way the Krishna conscious movement can spread very nicely. So it is the duty of devotees to train. Now, of course, training to some extent takes place simply by proximity, assimilation by proximity. That means that one who comes to the temple regularly, then he starts joining in the different programs, and just because the kirtan is going on, and devotees join in, and you learn how to sing the songs, and like that, even without any formal training. Just by joining in what the other devotees are doing, some training is there by assimilation. But even that also requires some, at the very least, there's some fine-tuning. Just like you see someone starts to dance in kirtan, but they dance in a funny way which is not very pleasing to Krishna. Just like religious dancing in Tamil Nadu is usually on the more like the Thai Pusam kind of style. So that's not the Vaishnava manner. It's different. Or someone might start to dance in disco style and wiggling the hips and all this kind of thing, because they don't know. So then that requires that should be pointed out. So training, what does it mean? It means instructing in what is the right thing to do and correcting the wrong thing. This should be done, this should not be done. Now, it requires, this is another subject in my book, a big subject, the topic of correcting others, because it is required. It's essential in training. And even a trained up, a devotee who is basically accepted as trained up, he may make mistakes or he may act improperly at some point in time. So how to correct, how to guide, how to give instruction, who should give that instruction? And that requires much consideration. It is not proper, for instance, if a new devotee has been instructed, just like I'll give an example. Someone told me many years ago, even many years ago, Satsarup Das Goswami, who I think some of you may know at least by name from his books. Even then he was a senior devotee. So one, he was chanting his rounds, and a new devotee who had recently been instructed that you should chant clearly came up to him and said, "Prabhu, you're not chanting clearly. You have to chant clearly." So being very humble, he said, "Oh, thank you very much." But actually, the new bhakti hadn't been instructed. Who is a senior devotee and who he's instructed? Not that he just goes and tells anybody and everybody. And maybe he wrote that in his japa reform notebook, or someone told him many years ago. So, who can instruct who? It's not the position of those that... big idiots. But people who are involved in business or people who are successful in the arts or whatever, they keep informed. They go on reading, and they try to acquire more knowledge. So education, either materially or spiritually, for someone who is progressive, they go on becoming educated throughout their lives. So self-education is there, and also, to some extent, there's also, one should also be ready to accept correction or advice from others. An intelligent person, he always learns from the situation, from everything he sees and does. Every experience is a learning experience for someone who is open to learn. And it's not that even senior devotees can learn from junior devotees. So if junior devotees are, for instance, very enthusiastic, they can pick up on that mood, or they hear something said by a junior devotee is spoken with some realization, they can accept that. One should not think that now I'm so great, I don't have anything to learn from anyone. If one thinks like that, then he can't learn anything, and he remains stagnant. So everyone should be open to learning. But this point, correction, like I was saying, generally that the training goes on for those who are newer. That's in the beginning, there should be a more intense period of training. And then later, when one is older, then he's expected to follow. That's all. It's not expected that all the devotees have to be corrected. And of course, if they're not trained properly in the beginning, then it becomes, if one is not trained properly in the beginning, and then he becomes accepted as a senior devotee with so many misconceptions or improper training or lack of training, then if he with such an misunderstandings he becomes a leader to others, then it becomes problematical. So that's why training in the beginning should be there. So just like the same example, children, it's the duty of parents to train their children very nicely, and if they don't, then later on the children are going to have so many problems in life, and the parents will also suffer from having rascal children. So in the beginning especially, that training must be there. Otherwise, the same thing, that if devotees are not nicely trained, then later on they may cause so many problems that they themselves will not advance nicely in Krishna consciousness, and because of that they won't be satisfied, and because of that they'll cause so many problems to themselves and others. So training means, first of all, those who are training, they should be well trained, and there should be ideal standards. And again, training that goes very much with organizing. Training means training what to do, how to do everything at every moment. So if there's conscientiousness and good organization, then by proximity and assimilation, many things will be picked up by those who come into that association. On the other hand, if there's not that good organization, and then devotees who come into that, they'll pick up an atmosphere. They'll pick up on the atmosphere. Well, it doesn't matter. Couldn't care. Anything that needs to be done, it's someone else's responsibility. Just like we see, the floor is dirty. And alright, it's dirty. Someone else's responsibility, not my responsibility. Some garbage is on the floor. And everyone thinks like that, and then no one even notices it's dirty, because they just take it as normal. And then it's better, then I don't have to bother cleaning. And then it's completely tamasic. And then Whatever else you do, that can't be satisfying to Krishna. So that conscientiousness and organization, just like this kind of thing, I came in and I was giving class and this whole thing was completely filthy. It's only, now it's not completely filthy, but it's only partially dirty. But it was completely filthy. Now, that shouldn't be. If you're going to give a stand for the class in Srimad Bhagavatam, it should be given clean. It's a basic point. But unless the atmosphere is there of that, oh, we have to do everything very nicely for Krishna, then no one sees, no one cares. So, first of all, there has to be a decision that we have to. Now, whatever we've been doing, we have to do everything very nicely for Krishna. When we're talking about training, it means actually it starts from the top. The leaders, they have to take up the responsibility to train their dependents on those who are, those they're supposed to be leading. Again, in the first lecture I was talking about how by far in all these fields, the devotees at Chopati and Belgaum and Pune are serving under Radhanath Swami. They're setting the standards in our movement in all these areas. So, like that, they have very good organization. They're conscious that devotees, when they're brought in, they need to be trained. They have good organizations and systems for doing so. And as a result, devotees who, first of all, everything works very nicely because the devotees are well trained and they're all cooperating very nicely. And then others become attracted to join that, and those who do join that, then they also become well trained. Another point is that they're quite selective about who they accept, because to become trained, one prerequisite is that you have to agree to want to be trained. You can't train someone who doesn't want to be trained. Of course, it's possible. There are stories just like Hitopadesh, the princes who didn't want to learn, so they were tricked into serving, into learning. So it is possible, but in general, the general prerequisite for training is tatviti pranipatena. One should be humble and submissive. He should be willing to accept that I require training. And training also, it requires a lot of input and a lot of patience. Again, the same example of parents instructing children. It requires a lot of patience. You may have to tell them, when they're beginning to get a little older, you may have to tell them 50 times that when you're eating, don't slobber it out of your mouth. There comes, of course, when the baby's young, you put food in the mouth and it comes out again and you just don't bother because they're a young baby. But there comes some point in time where you have to start telling them whether what goes in is supposed to stay in. And you might have to push it in their mouth and instruct them 50 times, and then they eventually get the right idea. Oh, okay, alright. And then for their whole life, they understand that when, if they're trained, I mean, you do see some people they're eating and it's all kind of coming out at the same time. But most people, they're trained at some point in time that you eat, you put the food in your mouth, you chew it, and you swallow it. Not that you put half in and then half falls down. That means at some point they've been trained to do so. But it requires patience. So again, in the modern age, people generally, they don't have much patience and they don't have much dedication even to train their own children. So in the same way, training devotees, that requires much patience and tolerance, because especially when people are older, to train them, it's usually more difficult because people already have wrong habits. There's a story we
We used to hear when I first joined the movement an example that in Vienna, which is the maybe the most important city in Europe for training in classical Western music, that they, if you want to be trained to, for instance, play the violin, then the master will charge, let's say, I don't know, 2,000 Austrian shillings an hour to someone who comes for training. But if you already know somewhat how to play the violin, then he charges a different price. How much?
4,000
shillings. Because if you already learn wrongly, then it's more difficult to teach. That's why Prabhupada used to say you should come before the guru like a blank slate. That's better than coming with all wrong writing. But generally, when we're older, we already have so many wrong ideas and misconceptions, so it becomes more difficult. So those who are training, they have to be very expert, very patient, and very tolerant. In 1975 or 6, Dhanavir Prabhu, who is now Dhanavir Goswami, made a proposal to Srila Prabhupada, which Srila Prabhupada accepted, and it's been going on in many centers of our movement ever since, that there be a bhakta program, that new devotees who are joining, they specifically come in one section and they're trained. In the beginning, they're simply trained. Means that they'll have extra classes and they'll be taken on Harinam and all that, but they'll be specifically under the guidance of the bhakta program leader who trains in everything from A to Z, as they say in America, and A to Z in India. So they're trained from in all the different aspects of temple life. So Prabhupada approved of that. And like I say, in many centers of our movement, that's going on. Again, in Chopati, they have the training, very nice, that brahmacharis who join, actually that's the meaning of a brahmachari. So someone who's doing a job, living outside, who's not married, they're not a brahmachari. They're a grihastha hone wale or something. They're a grihastha. They're living in the home, they're in the griha. So they're like half grihastha, not brahmachari. Of course, grihastha is also supposed to be a brahmachari, but in traditional usage, brahmachari means brahmachari guru kule, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmachari means one who lives in the gurukul, in the house of the guru. Brahmachari guru kule vasa. I left that word. He lives in the gurukul. So they have the program that the devotees who come, they have the brahmachari classes, and then when someone's been in the temple for some time and they've been listening, then they give them, okay, on this day you give the class. Among, not to all the devotees, but just to their smaller group. And then they're given training like this, preparing them to go out and preach in the colleges. So they have to prepare the class, they're given a topic, and then they speak, and all the devotee who's training will say that, well, this could be improved, that could be improved, and like this and like that. That's very nice training. So if you can institute all these things here. For the congregation also, you're having, I believe, every Sunday special topics like this, but it actually requires that. It's such a big job bringing people into Krishna consciousness. It requires that people who are coming in, they actually need a lot of attention and guidance, because in the beginning we can't expect people to understand everything immediately. Especially the philosophy and the whole way of life is quite different to everything offered in modern society. Of course, in India there's still some background of the culture, so you have that much advantage. It can be a disadvantage also if you are caught up in the Mayavad way. But definitely all devotees that are coming, they need proper guidance, and it may not be that the devotees who are living in the temple can do all of that themselves. Therefore, it requires among the congregation, on the some who are more senior, they take leadership as some are doing. And guide the devotees who are coming under them in all different aspects. Otherwise, what happens is that people take up Krishna consciousness and they get inspired by different aspects of the different things that devotees are doing. But at the same time, they don't properly understand, and they integrate different ideas that they may have had from previously, and therefore you get different speculations and concoctions and semi-Mayavad Krishna consciousness and semi-Sahajya and all this kind of thing. So we have to know what the standards are that are given by Srila Prabhupada. And one of the difficulties in this area is that they're actually not being codified. That, as I was saying last night, Prabhupada, that many of the instructions that Prabhupada gave on behavior and etiquette, probably most of them are not in his books. And then they may be written down, just like in the Prabhupada conversations books, or someone said, I remember Prabhupada said this, or something like that, but it's not being systematically brought together. So there's no reference guide, actually. So for that purpose, which is, I guess, why I've been asked to give this seminar on Vaishnava etiquette, for the last 12 years I've been collecting and Prabhupada's instructions and different things from Shastra on Vaishnava behavior. One very big area of Vaishnava behavior is, there are different areas. One is deity worship, another is family life in Krishna consciousness. So these are very big subjects, which I have not attempted to cover in this book. To some small extent, deity worship and family life, but they're very big topics. Which deity worship, there's already one book being brought out which needs some revising, but basically a book is there, that Pancharatra Pradeep has been brought out. And Brahmacharya and Krishna consciousness, that's another area of behavior. So I'd like also to bring out books in course of time on family life in Krishna consciousness, which I'll need the help of family members in Krishna consciousness to bring out, but it should be done. And sannyas in Krishna consciousness, all these different topics. But this Vaishnava culture, etiquette and behavior, that deals with the various details of day-to-day life, things like giving and receiving with your right hand, not putting your hand in your mouth, and so many things. Pointing at someone, shouldn't do that. Or scratching, looking at someone while scratching the eye. These are all inauspicious things, shouldn't be done. So that requires some analysis also, because Prabhupada sometimes did or said different things in different times and places and circumstances, so that needs to be analyzed. Just like that question came up yesterday about should women come to the temple and they're contaminated, period, which was surprising that the question even comes up here in South India, but it comes up every time I come here. So I guess that whatever opinion I give, it's not accepted. Anyway, that's part of teaching. We can't expect everyone to follow everything. Well, actually, the system is that we should take guidance from senior devotees. Now, another problem may be there that senior devotees, they themselves among themselves have different opinions, even based on what Prabhupada said. So in that case, then either it's accepted that there are different opinions and people may follow differently. That may be in the details. We don't have differences, for instance, that Krishna is God. We don't have differences of opinion on that. There might be some differences of opinion on the details of how to follow. So, the differences may be accepted, but for sake of standardization, there may be, the GBC, they also have to come to grips with these different questions. Looks like some question came up some time ago that should Chaitanya Mahaprabhu be decorated with a peacock feather? So it's a controversial question, because according to some, that should be against the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's not the enjoyer, he's the servant. But then Prabhupada, he often saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dressed with a peacock feather, and he approved that. So from the point of view of Ras and Siddhanta, there may be different outlooks, but then it was decided by the GBC body that because Prabhupada himself accepted that, then it can't be wrong. Although some still maintain a different opinion. So like that, there may be different outlooks by different devotees. In the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they don't wear tulsi beads because they think that you shouldn't go in the bathroom wearing tulsi beads. Of course, it could be said that you shouldn't go in. Go in the bathroom means the bathroom is a modern idea. There is no bathroom in Chile, but you shouldn't pass stool in Europe wearing these things. But then again, it could be said that, well, you shouldn't pass stool in urine wearing the tilak either. Every time you want to pass urine, you should take it off and then again put it on. It could be said, but anyway, I don't want to raise controversial issues. I'm just pointing out that even among Vaishnavas whose intention is to serve the Lord, there may be differences of opinion, but that doesn't mean that on that basis that everyone should just do whatever he likes. Rather, he should, because it's not that we just do what we like, because we should know there are certain modes of behavior that are pleasing to the Lord and those that are not. So we have to learn those that are pleasing, and we have to execute Krishna consciousness under the guidance of an acharya. So, having accepted an acharya, we should follow what he says, even though we may have a different opinion. But we should know the acharya, he should also follow his acharya. Now that he makes up something, then he becomes useless, then he's not an acharya, then he's a rascal. So, in our Krishna conscious movement, we should all follow the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, how he has taught us. We should follow that. And if there are different understandings of what it means to follow Srila Prabhupada, then that has to be resolved by the GBC body. If it's a major issue, if it's a minor issue, then they may be just, the differences may be allowed to exist. So training, everyone should submit themselves. Everyone should realize, I'm in need of training. I need to be trained. So we should, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we should get training and ask, please guide me. We should ask senior devotees who we see that their behavior is exemplary, that we should please guide me and submit ourselves. And also, the senior devotees, they should, even without being asked, it's their duty to give instruction to others, to guide, to point out if someone is doing something wrong, so that others can be benefited and come to the standard of learning properly how to serve Krishna. So that should be a natural process, just like in the family, children are born, it's natural that the parents should guide and instruct them. So similarly, when devotees come to Krishna consciousness, it should be natural, but some structure requires to be there also in a big organization like ours. If it's a forest gurukul with 4 or 5 brahmacharis, then so much structure may not be required. Simply the guru is there and he teaches. it may not be so much. Even then, there are rules in Shastra that you don't study at the different sandhyas, and you don't study on Ekadashi, and so many different rules are there. Days on which you should study and days on which you should not, and like this. But it may be more informal, but in a big organization like ours, where many people are coming, it's required that there be some organized endeavor to bring people in and train them step by step so that they become competent Vaishnavas and they themselves become satisfied in Krishna process. We ourselves can't become satisfied if we don't follow the process properly. So unless we learn what the process is, then how can we follow it properly? So that we have to learn. And like I say, the basic processes of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting, and plus there are so many basic rules of human behavior which are intrinsic to Vedic culture, which due to lack of Vedic culture require to be taught also. So all that is required. So, Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? I was told there might be some questions and answers session also on different topics. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna instructs that the Brahmacharya and the Vanaprastha should not cut one's nails, not cut their own nails. Not anyone else's nails. Isn't this fun of this? We get some specimens of Indian image. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna instructs that the Brahmacharya and the Vanaprastha should not cut one's nails, hair, etc. But in modern society is considered hygienic. Kindly explain. Is this your question? Who made this question? Who asked this question? I've touched on that in my book, Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness, which you probably don't have a copy of, that the traditional dress of a brahmacharya, he should have this nekala, he should wear this belt, and he should have this danda, brahmacharya danda. That's required for everyone in the forest, because there's snakes, and so everyone should carry a stick. So that's required. His hair should be matted, whereas Prabhupada, he gave a different dress, suitable for the modern age. That the instruction for the brahmacharya and the vanaprastha given in Bhagavatam are for the traditional society where they were living in the forest. But we're in completely different time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, Brahmacharya, the essence of Brahmacharya is the same, that one should live under a guru, be instructed by him, but the details are different. So that is one of the duties of our acharyas, to adjust, to understand what is the essence of Shastric instructions. The essence of Shastric instructions is that we're all servants of Krishna, and to give, as far as behavior is concerned, they should, because there are many different instructions in Shastra. So you'll find that in every traditional sampradaya, either Vaishnava sampradaya or even Mayavad, they have puja padatis and they have books for nitya kriya, daily activities. Madhvacharya has his, what is that called? Sadachar Smriti, in which he describes the basic activities every Madhva Brahmana should perform. And we have in our Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Hari Bhakti Vilas, which also we don't follow, to many things we don't follow. But every Sampradaya, either the original Acharya or Acharyas following the original Acharya, they not only Vaishnava Sampradaya, but That's why you have the word smarter, because they select different. The shastras give so many instructions on behavior. So different acharyas, and maybe karma kandya acharyas also, they select from the smriti shastras that you should do this. And those who follow that, they're called smarters. So actually, Vaishnavas, they're also smarters to some extent, in as much as we follow Vaishnava smriti. Gaura Vaishnava Sampradaya, Vaishnava Smriti is Hari Bhakti Vilas. So that means that the Smriti Acharya, they select from Smriti. Smriti means in Smriti there are only years for day to day life. They select those that are suitable for the fellow of their center and the presence of the fellow center.
Therefore, different people in different times, places, and circumstances with different goals in mind, also. Not all the followers of Vedic culture are Vaishnavas. So, others may be demigod worshippers. So, to attain their misdirected goal, they may follow different rules and regulations. Why should we not study or read over there the Kaddish? I didn't say some gurukuls, they're told not to. You're not supposed to study the Vedic mantras. I didn't elaborate. Actually, you're not supposed to study the Vedic mantras on Ekadashi. But on Ekadashi, that you're supposed to glorify Krishna more. Of course, those who are fully engaged in Krishna's service, they're already doing that. But on Ekadashi, you're supposed to glorify Krishna more. So on Ekadashi, it's recommended that we study, or we read. More than study is read aloud. From Shastra. So again, that rule that one should not study the Vedic mantras on Ekadashi, that applies to certain, it's generally the followers of the Vedas. But that does not apply to us who are more followers of the Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I didn't say, please don't misquote me, that we heard in class Bhaktivikas Swami said you shouldn't study on Ekadashi. No, I didn't say that. Please don't mishear and don't misquote. Young devotees are trained in basic things in Krishna consciousness. I'm very pleased to hear it. I hadn't noticed it that much myself, but I'm glad to know what's going on. But how can a little older devotees be educated? Because the educational system in ISKCON is not so good. Yes, that's true. In general, our educational system is not so good. It's good because it teaches Krishna is the Supreme, we should surrender to Him. But we require to institute educational systems. It's required. You please bring this up to the leading devotees here, that you please institute more educational systems, or maybe those who are in the congregation themselves. There are some congregational leading devotees present here. So if you can institute systems for training the devotees in the philosophy and practices of Krishna consciousness, that will be very much, that will be appreciated. Now, this will probably be in Hindi medium, but I don't know if you're aware, because in Hindi medium, in Hindi, Kamageshwar in Hindi. Yeah, now on this Star Plus TV, they have daily lectures on Bhagavad Gita by ISKCON devotees. So along with that, they're giving, they're offering correspondence courses in Bhagavad Gita. So that will be very useful if you know Hindi, but I don't think any of you know Hindi well enough to do a correspondence course. But whatever they're doing in Hindi, you can take the materials and put it in Tamil. Do it. And put English. It should be done. It's up to you. If you can get this TV also, if you can get TV preaching in Tamil, that would be very, very big preaching. Huge. This Star Plus TV, literally, probably hundreds of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people must be seeing that. It's in India, Nepal, UAE. So it's very big preaching. So, all the devotees be educated. Well, self-education is there to some extent. You can read Prabhupada's books again and again. Read through the Bhagavatam again and again. Who's read through the whole Bhagavatam? First to 12th canto, beginning to end. Anyone here? You have. Okay, that's nice. Anyone else? You have? Okay. Who's read through? There are two of you. Have you read through more than once? Only once. But when you finish, what did you think? I should read again? When you finish, then automatically you think, now I have to start again. And every time you read, you get more and more insights, and it becomes very wonderful after some time, because you get so many. You'll never finish reading the Bhagavatam. Even if you read all 12 cantos every 6 months, then you'll never come to a point. Even Bhagavad Gita, talking about those TV lectures, so I was doing some of them, so I was doing some more, preparing myself for the lectures, I was doing more study, and I was seeing there's so much depth in Bhagavad Gita which I wasn't aware of. There's so many different points, how the different words, they relate to the words in the verses before, and why Krishna is saying this at this time, and how the same word used here is used elsewhere in the different contexts, and so many wonderful things. So that self-study, that is very helpful. But it's also good, it's also required that there be good training programs. So maybe some of you can do that. I don't know how much time you all have. Those of you are working. That would be. That is required. Especially, we should give a good basis in Bhagavad Gita as it is to those who are coming. Often, devotees are coming new. They often want to jump right into the 10th canto and all these things. But it's. Unless there's a very solid basis in understanding Bhagavad Gita as it is, then even we may discuss all these things in the 10th canto and Krishna's leelas and all this, there won't be any proper understanding. It will simply be sahajya. So we should have a good solid basis in Gita as it is. This book on Vaishnava etiquette, whenever it's ready, that will also be very useful for guidance. And you can train people on the basis of that in Vaishnava behavior. There's literally hundreds of quotes from Prabhupada's books and lectures from different parts of Shastra like that. Yeah, the educational system in ISKCON accepted. It's not as good as it should be, but that means there's room to improve, so let's be positive, let's do something about it. That's up to you here now. We all have different roles to play, but those of you you're all living here, so those among you are more senior, then you take it up to improve the educational system here. That Bhagavad Gita study guide I recommend, that was compiled by Atmatapa Prabhu, who, those of you who know him know that he's a somewhat controversial figure, but that study guide he made, which is based on Bhagavad Gita as it is, actually if you get that, then you can go through, even yourself at home, and fill up all the notes. There are so many questions, so you can go through and answer all the questions, and when you're finished you'll have a big stack of notebooks like this, but you'll get a very good insight into Bhagavad Gita as it is. So that I highly recommend that. If you can, you can do your self-study at home on Bhagavad Gita as it is, if you get this study guide of Bhagavad Gita. And mostly mostly all the brahmacharis who are coming to me and who are becoming my disciples, I'm getting them to go through all of that. I have them, you should study this. So they benefit by that. Did you finish that? Or you're still working on it?
Hmm? Still working.
Still working on it, yeah. It's a big job. It requires some dedication, but it's very helpful for understanding the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. One devotee told me, since chanting beads represents gopis, one shouldn't pay obeisances given to his guru along with beads, but I never heard this from anybody else. Please explain. I also can't explain because I also never heard it, so what shall I explain? Then again, the same thing. Well, tilak also represents Krishna, so take your tilak off first of all, then you offer your obeisances. That said, that we should put the beads aside when we're offering obeisances, because otherwise they may fall down like that on the floor. Although Prabhupada, he often used to offer beads, even the beads went on the floor. He didn't allow the beads should be kept on the floor. Often we see in Bengal, among traditional Bengali Vaishnavas, when they offer obeisances, they'll put their beads on the back of their neck in the bead bag like that, or you can put them on the side or like this. Otherwise you can put them inside, if you're wearing like this, you can put inside and like that. The idea is that they're not touching the floor. Investing in shares and gambling. Is it gambling? Prabhupada mentions about gambling and speculative business enterprises. He puts them together. It's again, it's a debatable point. Some shares you could be taking a big risk on, others are not very risky. If you are exactly not share, but bonds, like government bonds, it's not exactly risky. Share marketing, if you are sufficiently informed, then it's, you could say it's a calculated risk. You see, gambling is just like they have the what's that called, roulette? It's just completely chance. Or betting on horses. Of course, there's some element of educated guess there. You'll bet on the favorite or something like this. But it's mostly chance. Whereas in share markets, anything can happen. In that case, any business could be considered it's a risk. Whatever you do, it's a risk. But if you, in share markets, if you're sufficiently informed, it requires a lot of study to understand it.
what are the different market tendencies and what is the solidity of this company. But it's not, it may not be exactly like gambling where it's just complete, it's mostly chance. So investing in the share markets, that may, it depends a lot on you. If you just go in and you just, okay, I'll put it on this one, and then of course that's just foolishness. But it's, if it's informed and one does very carefully, then it's not necessarily gambling. It's just like if you want to start a business, then you have to, you have to, you have to see what is the, before you start a business, say if you want to open a restaurant, you have to see something, is there a demand, is it in the right location, so many different things you have to consider. So in business enterprises, one should enter in an informed manner. Otherwise, it could be called, if not exactly gambling, it could be called foolishness. But on the whole, this modern business, it's in modern way, just like in Gita, Krishna says, Krishna Raksha Vanijam, Vaishya Karma Swabhavajam, Vaishyas, they engage in Vanijam, business. The modern mode of business, all this cheating and so many things, it's not very respectable. What to do? It's the modern world. We're living in a bad age. So, anything else? There are many, many points as regards training. Kirtan standards and so many things. Anyway, I'm collecting them all in this book. And then you can see. If you like, you can follow. If you don't, then do whatever you like.
Sometimes we say, one thing, but then still doesn't want to listen to instructions.
Sometimes we give instructions once, twice, and if they don't want to listen, then why try to instruct? That's my general policy. That in a situation like this, when I'm sitting so many people here, I'll give general instructions. And I also write books for different people and different devotees in different parts of the world who may be interested. But others, if they don't want to accept, if you have good instruction to give them, they don't want to accept them, why should I bother? Why should I bother to? Why should I instruct if they don't want to hear? Of course, if it's a parent with a child, then it's their duty to go on trying to instruct them. Once the child is grown up, if they don't want to follow them, what can you do? You can't. In English, there's a saying, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't force him to drink. You can't force someone to follow. That's why I was saying training means that first of all people have to be willing to be trained. And even if they're willing, that has to be done with a lot of patience. And like I was saying, correcting others doesn't always mean like shouting at them and chastising and so many things. It doesn't have to be done in that way. It can be done in a pleasing manner also. Although it doesn't always have to be. I mean, Prabhupada was very strong many times, chastised his disciples like anything. We have to see what is our ability and to instruct others. And we have to take that into account. So anything else?